everybody. I have been asked to do something absolutely impossible, which is to cover African history and enslavement from something like the 9th century to the 20th in 15 minutes, which is more than a bit difficult. Why do I take such a broad period? Because if we are talking of enslavement, then we have to begin with the enslavement of Africans by the Muslims. Roughly speaking, as far as we know at the moment, the number of Africans enslaved by the Muslim world was about equal to the number enslaved by the Europeans. However, the period of time is roughly double, so that the Muslim slave trade went on from the 9th century until the 19th, the European from the 15th until the 19th, but I would argue well into the 20th. I must also add that, of course, the Muslims enslaved not only Africans, they enslaved Europeans also at different periods. The British were enslaved, so were my Hungarian ancestors by the Turks, also Muslims who ruled my country for quite some time. Madge said something about the difference between European slavery and domestic slavery. I think that there, as far as we know, there's also a difference between how Muslims treated their slaves and how Europeans treated their slaves. As far as I know, except for a brief period in today's Iraq, Africans were usually used as domestic slaves, women were used as concubines, became wives, and the men were used in the military, because that is also how they were used in India, should you wish to look a bit further about where Africans were taken. Domestic slavery, and I'm sorry that in English, which is such a wonderful language, only has one word for slavery, because it seems to me that by confounding domestic slavery and transatlantic slavery, we're misleading many people. If you look at the history of Africa, say from what in Britain would be called medieval times, Africa in many ways was not different from Europe. You had a number of large empires because kings become hungry for more money, for more power, so they conquer people living next door. You had smaller kingdoms, you had dukedoms and princedoms. And you had many peoples who were living in what today would be we would call more democratic societies. That is, the village community was ruled by the elders, mainly the men, unfortunately. I haven't heard of any elders, including women. But it was certainly more democratic, and there was no hierarchical system. When you conquered people, you made them into slaves, and it did usually mean that they were domestic slaves working on the family farms and within the family compounds, and usually, as far as I know, were eventually incorporated within the family. But to me, what matters the most is that to Europeans, Africans were not human beings. They were simply not human. And I have come across absolutely no evidence that anywhere in Africa or in the Muslim world, a slave was seen as not human. You retained your humanity. What rules and regulations there were regarding your slave status were different. But that is an absolutely massive difference to me. Right, now, when Europeans began to take slaves, they conquered, they captured people along the coast. Eventually that became a very big business. Became a big business, as you all know, because we had plantations in the Americas which needed to be worked to make a lot of money. And people, again, as you know, the Africans were deemed to be inhuman, and anything at all could be done to them. What has been misleading us in the past almost 2 years is the propaganda in this country that because we passed an act in 1807 making slave trading illegal, that that act was followed. It was not followed at all. There's an outline of what went on in the little book that, that Fern held up a little while ago. Madge has more evidence for that in Bristol. The act was not followed. As many ways as possible were found of circumventing it so that we continued to participate in the trade in enslaved Africans. And the Africa squadron sent to the Africa coast was absolutely ineffective for about the first 35 years of its life over there. It's exactly the same with the 1833 Emancipation Act. The last colonial ordinance that I found making slavery illegal was in today's Ghana, passed in 1928. And subsequently I found reports in the newspapers of court cases going on into the 1940s for people being taken to court for holding slaves. We have been grossly misled by all the publicity about both of the acts. And what appalls me, or part of what appalls me by all of the misleading, is that hardly anybody bothered to read the 1833 Act through to the end. It babbles on and on and on and on. And when you get to the last two clauses, the second last one specifies that India is excluded, and there was no act passed in India making slavery illegal until 1868, and it was not obeyed. The assessments I have seen of numbers of slaves in Africa, in India, begins with 8 million and goes up to an untold number of millions. The last clause tells you where this act applies. It applies to Cape Town, Canada, Ceylon, and the Caribbean. The rest of what became the empire is not at all included. But what we were told last year was that slavery ended in the British Empire in 1838. So they're ignoring the fact that most of the empire was in fact ignored by that act. So this is, to me, government propaganda misleading all of us, except those who bothered to read the act right down to the end, about where that act applied. And that, to me, is pretty disgraceful. Now, what did the slave trade perpetrated by the Europeans mean to Africa? And I want to read you something, in fact, from Basil Davidson, who I think is one of the great historians. In fact, it's been quoted by André Gunde Frank, one of our socialist historians. Anyway, Davidson wrote that this trade isolated the peoples of the interior from any contact with Europe except through the sale of captives. The chiefs of coastal peoples throve and defended their power by purchasing European firearms. Those in the rear, deprived of any direct link with Europeans, were reduced to impotence or involvement in the trade themselves. Increasingly, they chose or were driven to involvement. I think that Davidson homogenizes too much there. What, of course, did go on is absolutely incessant warfare and raiding. And if you can imagine a map of Africa, the trade to the north, of course, came down across the Sahara. The trade to across the Atlantic, which kept moved up from the coast so that more people could be enslaved, most easily, of course, those who didn't have access to firearms. And you will find that from the north of Ghana onwards, there are people who are being subjected to slave raiding from the north, as well as slave raiding from the south. So they're being exported to the north and exported to the south. The remnants of that are there today. I have been in villages in northern Ghana where 7 languages are spoken because of all this pushing and shoving of people. Imagine the problems that causes. Can you imagine the problems that the history that is not being talked about causes? Because if we have problems dealing with the history of slavery, so has the part of Africa that I know the best also have very serious problems about how to deal with it. Is Mr. Kufuor of Ghana going to say that he's an Ashanti? The Ashanti in central Ghana were a very powerful kingdom because they traded gold and coal, and that's up to the north and also down to the south. Come the Atlantic slave trade to the south, they moved to conquer the people in the south so that they could have direct access to the Europeans, because they'll make more money and they'll get access to guns and other trade goods. But how are they going to get the slaves that they have in order to buy the European trade goods? Because the Europeans only want slaves. So what they're trying to do is they conquer the people around them and more people around them, and they say, we'll leave you in peace. What we want is slaves. So that those people now conquered by the Ashanti have to conquer other people so that they can take slaves and move them to the south. When we decide in 1885 to split Africa, we draw lines on maps. And at the point of a gun, we say, now we have to have peace. Doesn't matter that you were raiding and warring against each other before. Now we want peace because now we want you all working in our mines and our plantations. And at the point of a gun, there's peace. But can you imagine what is still there come independence and what problems are being faced? Because all this history is all there. So it's a bit difficult. There's some research by a man called Nunn, and if I can find it, I will read it to you, but I don't think I can find it. Yes, I have. It's come out very recently, and he says, my initial analysis of the data is consistent with historic accounts suggesting that the slave trades impeded the formation of broader ethnic groups, leading to ethnic fractionalization, and that slave trades resulted in a weakening and underdevelopment of political structures. The countries from which the largest number of slaves were taken are also the areas that had the most underdeveloped political structures at the end of the 19th century. And they are the areas that are the most ethnically fragmented today. He also talks in this article about the current consensus about why development in Africa stopped. After all, most people would today agree that in terms, however you measure development, there wasn't much difference between Africa and Europe in the 15th century. The idea is not only that warfare stopped development, but that the enormous export of people stops development. In that context, what you have to bear in mind that we have some notion of the numbers actually arriving in the Americas. That is much less, perhaps 20% less than the number actually on the ships. What we don't know is how many people were killed in the process of capture, how many people died on the march to the coast, often 200-300 miles, how many people died in the slave castles awaiting shipment. So if you think that so many millions were taken and so many died, and that it would of course be the most productive generation, you can begin to understand why development in Africa was stopped. And how, of course, the money could help European development. Right, I will stop there, I think. I find this a very difficult subject to talk about. And I'd like you all, if you can, to somehow protest about the propaganda of last year, because I think it has done a lot of damage. It tries to obscure the history that was. And I think it's time that we open the books. Thank you.